liars and the liars. They are no worse, just a song, but it's fast. For the recipe, this is a love attack. I know when our body's back, it's just like any fat. It retracts before impact. And just like fashion, it's a passion for the withered and hip. If you got the goods, they'll come in by it just to stay in the click. So don't delay. Tears because a baby's life has been revoked. The bond is broke, got so choke up and foe. Kiss on the close up, Mr. Wizard can't reform. No God like Hocus Pocus. So don't sit back, kick back and watch the world get bushed. Rap music in your neighborhood is under attack. Put away the crack before the crack put you away. You need to be there when your baby's old enough to relay.
Good evening. This is Canada on Cannabis, the show that believes the prohibition of cannabis is a crime against humanity. I'm Craig Canada and your host tonight. We're broadcasting, well, tonight, this week, and every week, 6 to 8 p.m. on Sunday evenings. Broadcasting on Freak Radio Santa Cruz, that's 101.1 FM, and streaming online on the internet at www.freakradio.org, and that is FreakRadio.org. If you go to that link, then there's a little antenna with words around it. One of them is listen, and you click on listen, and it will take you to a page where you can choose high band or low band. And we've just upped our bandwidth, our number of connections. I think it's 100 now. So chances are that nobody should be denied access streaming on the internet to the live broadcast. We have call-in lines, which are 831-427-3772 and 831-469-3119. While I'm talking about Free Radio and their website, on the website there's a donate button. You put donate and button together and you get donut. You might find a donut too, for all I know, but there is a donate button on there somewhere, and you can also send in checks if you'd like to contribute to Free Radio. Mail to 7811, that's P.O. Box, make the checks payable to FRSC, that's Free Radio Santa Cruz, and mail to P.O. Box 7811 Santa Cruz, California, 95061. As I said, my name is Craig Canada, and I go by the pseudonym or the nom de plume, Palm Springs Bum, the net handle. So you can find me on the internet at Palm Springs Bum on Facebook. I have my own blog, I have my own domain, actually, under Palm Springs Bum, www.palmspringsbum.org/blog is the main page for my website. I have a show page with the archives for this show going back until through March anyway, a good 20 of them, I guess, now. And you can find that by going to my blog page, www.palmspringsbum.org/blog, and clicking at the top right, there's a menu that says Home Broadcast Contents and Bookshop. Actually, it says Home Broadcast Bookshop and Contents, and if you click on Broadcast, that'll take you to my show page. The address for that, with the archives of this show and notes on the shows and lots of links, is www.palmspringsbum.org/blog. www.palmspringsbum.org/blog/Canada-on-cannabis. Also, in the right side panel of my blog, and by the way, that page, I have a donate button at the bottom of that if you'd like to contribute to my offset my expenses to put this show on. I don't get paid to do this. It all comes out of my pocket, and I'm poor, so donations are gratefully accepted. And at the bottom of my archives page, that's www.palmspringsbum.org/blog/Canada-on-cannabis. Down at the bottom of that is got a PayPal button if you'd like to contribute to my cause and keep this show on the air and offset my expenses for this show. I don't really have I don't have any guests lined up tonight. Perhaps in the future shows I will have guests lined up again. I have had in the past. And actually, my previous show, actually 2 weeks ago, I didn't do a show last week, and the show prior to that I don't have archived yet. I'll be getting that up in the next couple of days. But there's what I plan to do tonight is go through several articles that have come to my attention over the last couple of weeks. There's a number of developments all across the country, and so I try to keep abreast of them and keep people up on what's of interest to me. I've talked in the past about Colorado, and like it or not, the focus of the movement has certainly been on Colorado for the last year. They're certainly sharing the spotlight with California, and often they are getting a lot more media attention. I noticed the other day that Colorado Springs has 100 dispensaries. This is a town smaller than Oakland with 4. And Colorado Springs is now going to charge dispensaries various licensing fees, $1,000. Times 100 dispensaries, $1,000 for this and $2,000 for that and $3,000 for the other. So they're going to get $1 million from their dispensaries, which is about it's about the same as Oakland gets off of its 4 dispensaries, soon to be 5, I think. So I think I'll start with one article that caught my eye, and it's not particularly new, but this appeared in San Francisco Weekly. And so I think I'll start with this article. What I'm going to do tonight, there's a number of articles that have come up, and I don't have any guests scheduled, and no long videos that I think are particularly pertinent at this time. So I'm going to sit here and read articles and make comments about them tonight. The topic of the show is cannabis, marijuana legalization, politics, philosophy, and so on and so forth. And so callers are welcome, and I want to start with this article that was in San Francisco Weekly. It was published July the 1st. We have a call. And that was on line what? Line 1. Hello, caller. Can you hear me? You're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
What's up?
What's up? Who? So you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz. This is Canada on Cannabis. And so, what's up with you?
Simón, el chilango, por favor.
Oh, well, you know, I don't speak Spanish, so I guess we're at a loss here. You want to try that in English?
Ya valió madre. No, no hay problema, que nadie te hablo mañana.
Well, I don't know what to say to that, because, as I said, I don't know.
Órale, cabrón, ahí te veo mañana, te hablo mañana, cabrón. Échale ganas.
And they hung up. I guess I'll get somebody to translate that sooner or later and see what it was all about. Maybe not. Anyway, looks like I got the mic turned up a bit too high there. Medical cannabis movement becoming less gay. And this is the San Francisco Weekly, July 1st. And it says, like Sarah Palin recounting the tale of Paul Revere's ride to warn the British of their own impending arrival, we Americans often have a fuzzy grasp of our history. This extends to the medical cannabis movement, which was birthed in San Francisco in the 1980s out of the AIDS epidemic. Gay men dying of AIDS during the darkest years of the Ronald Reagan era of ignorance found solace and in some cases healing from the cannabis plant. In other words, without LGBT, that's lesbian, gay, bi, transgender movement, and specifically the AIDS epidemic, there would be no medical cannabis movement. This is easy to forget at some marijuana-themed events and expos around the Bay Area, which now feature scantily clad women pushing delivery services and young urban tattooed gentlemen pushing pipes. That's not exactly gay-centric, and in fact, it's downright homophobic, according to some. Quote, those little hookers and the skateboard thugs and the womanizing, quote, says Randy Silva, a PhD student in clinical psychology who's been a medical cannabis patient since he contracted HIV in 2002. And it should be noted, a close friend of your correspondent who's accompanied us to several medical cannabis-themed events over the past year. It's not a gay-friendly atmosphere in any way, Silva added. Quote, nobody even seems to know that it's because of AIDS that pot is legal in the first place. It's a big pet peeve of mine. Silva's theory may hold water. There are very few storefront dispensaries we can name that fly the LGBT rainbow flag outside of their establishments. And these days, there is one dispensary in the entire Castro. Then there was the odd timing of the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup this past weekend, which coincided with the San Francisco's Pride celebration. But some lesbian, gay, bi, transgender medical cannabis activists we talk to think the movement is just more diversified than anything else. As one activist told us, quote, thugs get AIDS too, quote. Yeah, that's true. The story goes that Castro District activist and pot dealer Dennis Perrone co-authored Proposition 215 in part as a tribute to his deceased lover, who died from AIDS in the early 1990s. Consider this. Every legal pot smoker has a dead gay man to thank for the legal plants in his or her closet. But that doesn't mean the movement is necessarily gay-friendly, or gay-unfriendly, for that matter, says David Goldman, facilitator of the San Francisco chapter of Americans for Safe Access. Goldman was a teacher more than 30 years ago. He taught Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom mathematics at Redwood High in Marin County, and was also a gay rights activist in the 1970s, shortly after moving to the Castro, where he has lived since with his husband of 30 years. Quote, gay awareness rings a positive bell for me, but not seeing it isn't necessarily going to ring a negative bell for me, quote, says Goldman, who says that he attended both the Medical Cannabis Cup and the Pride celebrations over the weekend. Quote, I think the medical cannabis movement is very diversified, he added. Quote, when I go to these events, I see all social classes. I see old, I see young, I see white, I see black. Quote. The fact that the Cup was scheduled for the same weekend as Pride wasn't High Times' intention, according to West Coast editor David Bienenstock. The timing was just a coincidence, Bienenstock told us in an email. He pointed out that High Times took out a full-page ad in the Pride Guide. The magazine also used the lesbian, gay, bi, transgender movement as a positive model in the activism seminar during the Cup, telling pot users to, quote, come out of the cannabis closet. It could be a coincidence that the cannabis-friendliest politicians in Sacramento both happen to be gay. State Senator Mark Leno and Assemblyman Tom Amiano are both representatives from San Francisco, where constituents would not be satisfied with anything less. It stands to mention that there have been no recorded incidents of outright homophobia at any cannabis-related events. Such acts, quote, would not be tolerated by any of us, quote, Bienenstock said. And you can bet your bottom bong that any homophobia would have been excoriated in the press and led to the offender's ostracization. It could just be that the movements expanded to include a diverse cast of characters. And while it wouldn't be fair to expect every lesbian, gay, bi, transgender activist to be well-versed in black history, for example, it would be good to know exactly why we are in 2011 talking about medical marijuana in 16 states and counting. As Eric Pearson, founder of Mission Street Dispensary, SPARC, put it, quote, it's natural for the movement to grow beyond its lesbian, gay, bi, transgender roots. But it's still important for people to be mindful of that history. So that was in the San Francisco Weekly, titled Medical Cannabis Movement Becoming Less Gay, on Friday, July the 1st, 2011. And this seems to be get lost a lot. It all began in the Castro, in the gay community, with people like Dennis Perone. One person who is gay, who has been a long time out front advocate of medical marijuana and marijuana legalization that the article did not mention, is Massachusetts Representative Barney Frank. And he has recently introduced a bill, let me see if I can remember the number now and just mention it in conjunction with this article, since it's a good time to mention it. And by the way, this is a very complicated bill, and what it exactly does, I'm not sure about. Actually, here's an article, it looks like, in the Huffington Post, published on the June the 22nd about it last month, if it ever comes up. Speaking of Barney Frank, let's see if it's... article mentions the bill number, which I've gotten 2306. Is that what it was? 2306. Let's see. I'm still looking for this bill by Barney Frank here during this deadly silence here on the air. The bill number, which I can tell you about here, there's so many numbers I have in my head right now, it's hard to keep them. But it does, yeah, it appears to be 2306. Let's see. This article is in... Our Colorado, it appears, and it looks like if it comes up, this was published July the 21st. And at the end of this article, it talks about 2306. On June the 25th, Representatives Ron Paul, Republican of Texas, and Representatives Barney Frank, Democrat of Massachusetts, introduced HB 2306, which seeks to remove marijuana from the list of controlled substances and delegate the regulation of the substances to the individual states. And I took a look at the, I haven't parsed through the official copy of the bill. You can find that online. And hopefully I'll write an article about it. Maybe, I don't know, I haven't written much lately. Maybe it's because it just all seems too overwhelming and there's too much to write about. And also, it's terribly depressing for me because things look pretty grim to me. I don't like where I see things going, these taxes on medicine and so forth. But anyway, so this Ron Paul Barney Frank bill is HB 2306. It was introduced on June the 25th, and it will remove marijuana from the Controlled Substances Act and some sections of the code, but not all of them. You can do a search on the U.S. code and find how many mentions of marijuana there are, and there's a lot more than in the Barney Frank bill. The Barney Frank bill removes, but this was introduced, and so removing marijuana from the Controlled Substances Act is going to do more to legalize it than anything else will. Once it's either rescheduled or removed from the Controlled Substances Act, for instance, it will no longer zero policy, federal government zero policy guidelines should no longer apply to marijuana in employment, in housing, in subsidized housing. So that alone is going to totally change the atmosphere. It's going to totally change everything. That will do more to legalize marijuana than any passage of any legalization bill or anything else, is to just get it off the Controlled Substances Act. And in conjunction with that, recently there was an application. A lawsuit is going forward regarding rescheduling, and the DEA has reiterated that marijuana has no medical value. Meanwhile, the government has patents on marijuana for medical use and has licensed 55, I believe. There's articles saying the government has licensed 55. Vendors, corporations, companies to manufacture marijuana for medical use, to produce marijuana for medical use from extracts and from raw extracts. And so while the government, the U.S. federal government, is licensing, they've now supposedly approved, there are articles, you can look it up on the internet, there's articles on my website. Links to articles on my website. 55 licenses to pharmaceutical companies to produce medical marijuana. They are claiming it has no medical value. The whole thrust of this, the whole point of this, is to make it illegal for people to grow their own and to force people. And particularly medical patients who need it the most and are in the most critical need, to have to purchase it from someone else and to have to purchase it in some manufactured, synthesized form, so that you can't use it. You just can't grow a bud in your yard and dry it and smoke it. It's got to be manufactured somehow. That's what this is all about, to give control of marijuana to the government and to the corporations, the pharmaceutical companies, the very people who have been putting you in jail and ruining your lives for 70 or 80 years over this plant, are now going to control it and sell it back to you for as much as they can get out of you and put you in jail if you try to provide your own. That's where the thrust of what's going on right now in the movement, that's where it's all going. And I find that very disturbing. And making a good case and really supporting these claims is very time consuming, and it requires a lot of documentation and it takes a long time to do it. But you can find You can find this on my website. I was just looking over this article about the Barney Frank thing. Maybe I'll read that later. There's been two developments in Colorado, speaking of Colorado, one of them is regarding driving. Percentage in driving, if I could find that article and pull it up for you. Actually, there's been several things, but there's been two major events. Actually, before I get to the driving, I think I'll go to this. This is, I've been talking about the division in Colorado, and I in previous shows I've talked about MPP and Sensible Safer Colorado banded together and filed 8 versions of the same initiative to be on the Colorado ballot in 2012. Another organization, Legalize 2012, has filed suit attempting to enjoin them from using the word legalize in reference to their initiative and their campaign, because it's not at all about that. And Legalize 2012 is Miguel Lopez and various people. You've got Mason Tvert and the Marijuana Policy Project and Sensible Safer Colorado and Normal on one side, the major organizations, and on the other side you've got this grassroots effort called Legalize 2012. It's composed of people like Robert Corey, one of the most prominent and well-spoken and well-written and right-on commentators on the movement in Colorado. If you look up Robert Corey and his wife, both, I've read many of their articles and been very impressed with the clarity of their thinking and their writing. This article here, there's been an ongoing battle between these two groups. And as I said, Legalize 2012 filed papers, I believe, with the Attorney General of Colorado seeking to enjoin the MPP, Normal, Safer, Sensible, Mason, Tvert people from using the word legalize with their initiative, in conjunction with their initiative, because it was no such thing. And this is something I've been harping on for a long time, by the way, in California. It's the same deceptive marketing. Newspapers, the LA Times, Normal, and everyone are still calling Proposition 19 legalization, even though, according to luminaries such as Bill Panzer when I read it, my conclusion was it was the New Improved Marijuana Tax Act of 1937. It was the opposite of legalization. It was a thinly veiled prohibition, is how Dennis Perone described this Proposition 219. And yet, everyone calls it legalization. And the fact is that 31% of the electorate who voted against Proposition 19 in California believed either supported legalization of marijuana or believed that the penalties on marijuana should be reduced. And when you think about the second part of that question there, that 31% of the people who voted against Proposition 19 said yes to, people who believed the penalties for marijuana should be reduced voted against Proposition 19. And the fact is that Proposition 19 did not remove a single marijuana crime from the California books. In fact, it added one. Anyway, I've spoken and written ad nauseum about how Proposition 19 was not legalization. I don't really want to get too deeply into that right now, but rather just point out that we see the same dynamic going on here in Colorado, where the national organizations, the people with the funding and the people that the media are going to for their sound bites are sponsoring legislation and selling it as legalization, when the grassroots and organizations in Colorado, Legalize 2012, are saying it's not legalization. And thank God, as far as I'm concerned, that they're raising the issue. It was very distressing for me to sit here and watch for 2 years and see not one mainstream media outlet take on the issue that, that Proposition 19 was not legalization, and it was the opposite. And so this this confrontation in Colorado is reaching a head here, and this is in the the article I'm going to read now is in the Colorado Independent, and it was published on the 22nd of July, 2011, and the title is Marijuana Complaint Filed with Secretary of State. Marijuana legalization advocate Mason Tevert today filed a formal complaint with the Secretary of State's office alleging that opponents of his group have stolen signed petitions from people circulating them on behalf of Tevert's Regulate Marijuana Like Alcohol organization. The complaint says that on July 17, Miguel Lopez took a petition out of the hands of someone trying to sign it at Denver's Skyline Park, threw it in the trash, and then stood in front of the trash to prevent anyone from retrieving it. The complaint alleges that a few minutes later, Corey Donahue removed the petition from the trash and gave it to Robert Lopez, who then left the scene with the petition, which Tevert said he had around... which Tevert said had around a dozen signatures on it. Miguel Lopez and Donahue are known to oppose Tevert's effort and to support a broader approach to legalization. The Colorado Independent earlier reported that they supported Legalize 2012, but the director of the effort said they are not affiliated with Legalize 2012. Quote, they have no capacity whatever with Legalize 2012. Said Laura Creho. Well, I guess Lopez is not affiliated with Legalize 2012, then. I thought he was. Evidently, they are not. When reached by phone, Miguel Lopez said it was Tevert's organization that was interrupting an event his group was sponsoring and that the petitioner had once... and that the petitioner had been asked to leave. Now, you get this? Okay. So Tevert's group has sent... people to petition to get signatures for their opposing petition, competing petition, at an event organized by Mason Tevert. When reached by phone, Miguel Lopez said it was Tevert's organization that was interrupting an event his group was sponsoring and that the petitioner had been asked to leave. Their petition was creating a distraction while we were holding a rally and giving an educational talk. The individual we took the petition from was not trying to sign it. He was trying to destroy it. They were warned not to be there, he said. Tevert said that Lopez's account is a fantasy. Quote, that is entirely false based on accounts of all the witnesses, but I wouldn't expect them to acknowledge what they did. Donahue and Robert Lopez could not be reached. A message left on the Legalize 2012 phone was not quickly returned. Lopez says Tevert's group is not petitioning to legalize marijuana, but is only advocating incremental change, whereas their group supports nearly complete legalization. It is possible that multiple legalization initiatives will be on the 2012 ballot. Miguel Lopez made news earlier this year when his videotaped confrontation with lawmakers led to one legislator tearing up a piece of pro-marijuana legislation. He also ran for governor in 2010, managing to finish behind Republican Dan Mays. Secretary of State spokesperson Rich Coolidge said as far as he knew, this was the first time ever anyone had turned in a complaint alleging the theft of a petition. Quote, that just tells you this is an unfortunate precedent, quote, said Tevert. Quote, it may be the first time in Colorado that anyone has sunk this low. This should be investigated and prosecuted to the fullest extent possible. If Miguel and Corey care about democracy and the democratic process, as they say they do, then there is no excuse for them to steal petitions and undermine the democratic process in Colorado. Quote, harassing and attacking volunteers, violating laws, and preventing Colorado voters from having their signatures counted is absolutely unacceptable and will not be tolerated. We will be pursuing this case and any in the future to the fullest extent of the law, quote, he concluded. So there you have it. Well, not really. There's about 40 comments to this. Let's just... Oh, this is a good one. It says, by bail bondsman. This is something that needs to be hashed out behind closed doors, not by using the court system to attack your political adversaries. You know, I agree with that because it seems to me that that's what's going on here, is that the Marijuana Policy Project and Normal and Mason Tevert and Sensible, Saner, Safer Colorado and whatever the names of these groups are attacking grassroots activists who are fighting for real legalization and trying to get an initiative on the ballot that will be real legalization and not be a money-making monopoly for a few hand-picked people, which is what these other people are sponsoring here. Let's just read the rest of this comment. This is something that needs to be hashed out behind closed doors, not by using the court system to attack your political adversaries. Congratulations, you have officially stooped to the level of those that imprison innocent people for smoking weed, Mason. You should be unabashedly ashamed. I can get you 12 signatures to replace any that were allegedly stolen, but I think the fact that you are seeking criminal charges in a skirmish of, quote, he said, she said, quote, is more than nauseating. It is heartbreaking. Take a good look in the mirror and be ashamed. Be very ashamed. You know, folks, that sums up pretty much how I feel about this whole issue, watching it from afar here in California. And it looks like to me that's exactly what's going on all across the country. These people who are out to exploit marijuana as much as they can, squeeze patients for every last cent they can, are the ones that are putting money into these organizations to put these initiatives on the ballot, which will only benefit the people who are going to make money out of it, only going to benefit the corporations. They're going to create monopolies. They're going to make the bar so high when it comes to getting a license to distribute and cultivate that only very few people are going to be able to get into the business and employ themselves. You know, when excuse me. When I first got into this, I had this absurd idea that the best people to be in the business, to be employed, would be medical marijuana patients. They care about it, they know about it, and they put themselves on the line for it. And they should be the ones, you know, if it can provide them a comfortable living, cultivating and distributing marijuana, shouldn't they be the ones to do it? But no. What we've got is profiteers, people coming in with daddy's money and setting up chain stores all over the country to sell hydroponic equipment and taxing. And, you know, it occurred to me the other day when talking about all this money, all these taxes that they're putting on medical marijuana. Keep in mind, the only people paying taxes on marijuana now are medical patients. And they're giving taxes to the government while medical marijuana defendants are going begging. Patients, Molly Fry and Dale Schaefer, went to jail for 5 years just a couple of months ago. And these people go begging for money to pay for a lawyer. Lawyers who charge a minimum of $25,000 for a case, and when you're talking about people like Dale Schaefer, Molly Fry, with appeals at the Supreme Court, you're talking hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars. And you've got medical marijuana patients and providers in California going begging for money. I remember Roger Mench, who is now in jail for 5 years, going begging for money. While dispensaries are paying taxes to government and paying $60,000 license fees and $120,000 cultivation fees. All of this out of Oakland and Oaksterdam U. Oakland, a city larger than, with a population larger, much larger than Colorado Springs, with only 4 dispensaries, while Colorado Springs has 100. You know, I could sit here all night and read the comments on this article. It looks like it's actually quite a good discussion. It's on my website. The link is on my Palm Springs Bum Facebook page, on my Palm Springs Bum blog. And it's in the Colorado Independent, and the title of it is Marijuana Complaint Filed with Secretary of State. It was published on the 22nd of July, 2011. There's been another development in Colorado, which we want to talk about. I believe it was 2061, or God, there's so many numbers, if I can find that bill, was defeated. And it was defeated. Normal supported the bill. And I have an article in my blog talking about it, where Robert Corey, who I mentioned previously, essentially said that by supporting this bill, Normal was throwing medical marijuana, declaring hunting season on medical marijuana patients. It essentially set a limit. I think it was like 5% or something. I think the limit is in the article I'm going to read you. With regard to being impaired while driving, essentially this would mean that medical marijuana patients would not be able to drive. Medical marijuana patients, the whole point of being a medical marijuana patient is to maintain a relatively high level of the cannabinoids in your system. I mean, that's why you are a medical marijuana patient. I mean, that's the definition. They smoke every couple of hours. And and it doesn't impair people. There's been many studies regarding that. I'm just looking for this article about Colorado and having not an easy time of finding it about this defeat of this bill. It's the one about the Secretary of State, the movement. Okay, Stars and Stripes. Well, let's see if it's somewhere else. You're listening to Canada on Cannabis. My name is Craig Canada. This is the show that believes the prohibition of marijuana is a crime against humanity. And I am sitting here trying to find an article about Colorado. And, let's see if I can just find something on that. Well, I know where to find it. Not doing a good job of finding that article at the moment. I should be able to get it up shortly, maybe this way. You know what I'll do while I'm looking for this? Michael Jolson put this on my wall. Michael Jolson is in Santa Cruz, and he's local. And they're sponsoring the California Cannabis, Hemp, and Health Initiative 2012. And they're hoping to get it on the ballot in 2012. And they're in the process of organizing a petition drive. And they also want to be soliciting contributions to pay for the petition drive. They are seeking $1 million and 1 million signatures to get this on the ballot. And I will be constantly talking about it. I support this amendment. I think it's the closest thing to true legalization we're going to get. Unlike all the others that have been, unlike all the other proposals, it exempts medical marijuana patients from any taxes. None of the others explicitly did that. Well, actually, you know, when this all started, the bill that Tommy Amiano proposed in the legislature explicitly exempted medical marijuana patients from the tax. And this is the one that was talking about, I think, $1.4 billion in taxes or something, and just turned into a media circus feeding frenzy over money. And the fact that the California accountant or whoever came up with the figure, $1.4 billion, that taxes on medical marijuana was excluded from this figure, and the fact that marijuana is medicine should not be taxed. The media just seemed to completely ignore it with the introduction of Measure F in Oakland, which was the first sin tax on marijuana, and then the introduction of Proposition in 19 California, which was the only proposition ballot vying for the ballot that did not exempt medicine, medical marijuana from the taxes. Every other petition that was trying to get on the ballot that year, there were four of them, did exempt medical marijuana from the taxes, but evidently nobody could make a killing off of the sick and dying that way, and so they weren't willing to put money behind anything else. Anyway, this is Tony Serra here regarding Molly Fry and Dale Schaefer. Hopefully coming up just now.
Yeah, just want to let you know that you gave an extremely magnifying and electric speech out there. Before we close off this interview, is there anything important that you want to say? One last thing. What does Deep Green Festival represent, and what is one last word that we can take?
Quickly, you know, the feds now are so, I don't know, sadistic toward marijuana. It's like the last gasp of the dinosaur. So, sadly, there's two good people martyred. They're going to go to prison May 2nd for 5-year minimum mandatory. And you probably know it's Molly Fry, who's a physician, and Dale Schaefer, who's her husband, who's a lawyer. And they had an epiphany, and they grew marijuana, and it wasn't for profit. It was because they believed in it. They were making more money before, and the feds came down on them, mainly because Dale was going to run for DA on a pro-marijuana ticket. So, you know, they were convicted, and there's a minimum mandatory, and they both have serious illnesses, and they're going to go in, and they can die, and it's very sad. And, you know, people should demonstrate, and people should be, you know, wishing them well. And so, I don't know, I see it coming up on May 2nd, so it's kind of in my psyche, and that I'd like to just tell everyone what beautiful people they are.
Thank you very much for being with us today, and you're absolutely an inspiration to all of us, and thank you for this interview.
Yeah, that was just a brief moment of Tony Serra talking about Dale Schaefer and Molly Fry. And, you know, he used the word epiphany there, and I thought, yeah, that's what happened to me. It's that's the perfect way to describe it. And after you've had this epiphany, you do tend to become a bit extreme when you realize the magnitude of the crime against humanity that has been perpetrated by this prohibition of marijuana, and it's basically cultural genocide is what's going on here. You know, we talk about Bosnia and Herzegovina, but here in the U.S. we've had cultural suicide going on for 70 years, and you know, it's far beyond the Trail of Tears now. What future generations will call it? Well, I have no doubt that future generations will look back on this time and call the prohibition of marijuana the greatest crime against humanity in the history of civilization. This item I was talking about, and I'm not sure why it's coming up now, but it's coming out in the news now, and it's about TH limit for drivers fails in Colorado. You know, I'm saying there was a couple of items out in Colorado. The first one was the lawsuit with Mason Tevert and Sensible Safer Saner Colorado against Legalized 2012 and Miguel Lopez and Corey Donahue and so forth, grassroots organization. And this other item is about driving, and so I'll just read this. This is from the Digital Journal. The title, it's a press release, and the title is THC Limit for Drivers Fails in Colorado Senate. Now, this is a bill that Normal sponsored, and it's a bill that Robert Corey termed declaring hunting season or open season on medical marijuana patients. This was the 24th of July is when the press release came out, and it says, on May 9th, 2011, the Colorado Senate voted against HB 1261, which proposed a DUI limit of 5 nanograms of THC per milliliter of blood for drivers. Okay, so this was not 5%, as I was saying earlier, misspeaking. It's 5 nanograms, whatever a nanogram is. I guess that's a tiny little part of a gram. And a gram is a very little bit. You know, there's 28 grams in an ounce, by the way. I think everybody listening to this show knows that. If you don't, you should. 28 grams per ounce. Anyway, on May 9th, 2011, the Colorado Senate voted against HB 1261, which proposed a DUI limit of 5 nanograms of THC per milliliter of blood for drivers. This vote came as a surprise to many and was a victory for medical marijuana users and a disappointment for law enforcement agencies. Colorado's medical marijuana law allows individuals to obtain small amounts of marijuana for medical purposes. Many of these individuals have high THC levels from their legal marijuana use. Colorado's THC DUI bill did not differentiate between recent marijuana use, active metabolites, and THC levels that have built up from years of smoking marijuana. Had it passed, there may have been serious consequences for those using marijuana legally, as well as those who had used marijuana legally or illegally in the past. The history of Colorado's marijuana driving bill, sponsored by Republican Mark Waller and Democrat Claire Levy, the bill was meant to enhance current laws in place for DUI, driving under the influence of drugs, and DWAI, driving while ability impaired. The bill overwhelmingly passed the Colorado House with a 51-14 vote. The Senate chair first called for a voice vote, but then had to call on opponents to stand up as the results were unclear at first. When more than 18 senators stood to show their opposition, the chair ruled the bill had failed. As a last effort, Senators Boyd and King attempted to revive the bill with an amendment. The Senate voted 20-15 to not revive the bill, effectively ending its chances for the current legislative session. A victory for medical marijuana users. Many medical marijuana patients opposed the bill as it infringed upon their rights to use the physician-prescribed drug. Quote, "This is a huge victory for patients who fought to uphold their rights with hundreds of letters and phone calls," quote, said Laura Creho, spokesman for the Cannabis Therapy Institute, an influential opponent of the bill. The Colorado Medical Marijuana Registry has received 137,556 new patient applications since it began operating in June 2001. Of accepted applicants, 69% are male and 56% reside in the Denver metro area. 69% are male and 56% reside in the Denver metro area. The most common health complaints for which marijuana has been prescribed are severe pain, muscle spasms, and severe nausea. The DUI marijuana bill would have imposed restrictions on individuals legally taking marijuana for medical reasons. Interestingly, if the bill had passed and the 5 nanogram THC limit was implemented, it would be the most tolerant law of its kind in the U.S. Colorado Attorney General John Suthers commented on his disappointment with the Senate's decision, saying it exhibited not only lack of concern for the safety of Colorado drivers and pedestrians, but also an inability to lead. Perhaps instead, the fact that the bill did not pass shows concern. Concern for those who use medical marijuana. So this is this other development, as I said. Well, let me just look up this quote by Robert Corey. Hopefully it won't take me too long because I know where this one is. It's on www.palmspringsbum.org/blog, and it should be the very first article currently on the top of the various articles on my blog. Title: Notes on Cannabis Therapy Institute Conference, Denver. And before I get to that, I just want to look this up because it does seem to me that this Lisa Creho, I believe that was her name, was also the person mentioned in this other article I was reading about Colorado. If I can get that other article up right quick. Dum-da-dum-dum. Medical marijuana complaint compiled with... Sitting here waiting on the computer for a second, I just wanted to check that first article. Oh no, my computer's locked up. Yes, it was Laura Creho. So the person, Laura Creho, in that previous article I was talking about, well, this is the quote from the injunction, the petition brouhaha that I was reading about earlier with Miguel Lopez and Sensible Safer and Mason Tevert. The Colorado Independent earlier reported that they supported Legalize 2012, but the director of that effort said they are not affiliated with Legalize 2012. Quote, they have no capacity whatever with Legalize 2012, said Laura Creho. So Laura Creho is evidently a spokesperson for Legalize 2012 and perhaps in charge. And so the same person who is mentioned in this previous article as affiliated with Legalize 2012 is being quoted here as saying this is a victory for medical marijuana patients, Laura Creho. I'll just read that quote to you again. Many medical marijuana patients, and now we're talking about this 5 nanogram limit on THC for drivers for DUI in Colorado, five nanograms of THC, and you've broken a law in Colorado. This applies to medical marijuana patients. Anyway, many medical marijuana patients opposed the bill as it infringed upon their rights to use the physician-prescribed drug. Quote, this is a huge victory for patients who fought to uphold their rights with hundreds of letters and phone calls, said Laura Creho, spokeswoman for the Cannabis Therapy Institute, an influential opponent of the bill. So you've got here the Cannabis Therapy Institute, Legalize 2012 on the one side, and on the other side in Colorado, you have the Marijuana Policy Project, the Drug Policy Alliance, the National Organization for Reform of Medical Marijuana Laws, and Sensible, Safer, Saner Marijuana and Mason Tevert. So basically you've got on the one side the corporate shills, Normal and MPP, and on the other side grassroots, Cannabis Therapy Institute and Legalize 2012 in Colorado. And so anyway, this bill was defeated, and so Normal had supported this bill that would have made these five nanograms illegal. And on my blog, as I said, I took notes, listened to the video, this video of this Cannabis Therapy Institute conference in Normal where Robert Corey speaks, and what he says about this bill, specifically this 2361. Quote, we had our own movement, some elements of our movement against us, the Normal organization. Legislators see Normal as speaking for our entire movement, and if that were the case before, that is no longer the case with the defeat of this 1261 bill. Not even close. This is a supposedly pro-marijuana organization endorsing a hunting season on medical marijuana patients. Well, you know, a lot of people, myself included, believe that's what Normal has been doing all along, and that they're doing everything they can to impede the legalization of marijuana with these bills, along with the Marijuana Policy Project. There's just one more article I want to read you. Well, it's not really about Colorado. Those are two items from Colorado, which I wanted to read. And there's been This article appeared in the Colorado Independent, but it's not really about Colorado so much as just kind of a recap. This article appeared in the Colorado Independent, and it appeared on was published on July the 18th. The title is "Majority of States Could Soon Have Medical Marijuana." It's really hard to keep up with all that's going on right now. I myself have known of initiatives in Washington and Oregon and Ohio. I've spent some time during the week reading the first half of one of the Ohio initiatives. There's two initiatives, and you've got the same conflict I've been talking about in Colorado and in California going on in Ohio with MPP and Normal and the money people, the corporate monopoly people on one side and grassroots on the other. And this has also been repeated in Michigan and basically all over the country. This is the battle here. Basically selling out the movements, what's going on here by these organizations. And if you don't, if we don't realize what's happening, put a stop to it, we're going to have lost. We'll have won the battle, but have lost the war. That's why I'm doing this show, is because I'm hoping that maybe somebody will hear me and think about, winning the war. Let's not win the battle to lose the war, and that's what's going on here with the movement. I find it very depressing. Anyway, this article appeared in the Colorado Independent. It's titled "Majority of States Could Soon Have Medical Marijuana." It was published on July the 18th, 2011, and it reads: a few months ago, Congressman Jared Polis told the Colorado Independent that he thought it would take a majority of states legalizing medical marijuana or otherwise liberalizing their laws before Congress would be likely to do anything at the federal level. Now, that's what we believed for 15 years. When I first became involved in the movement back in 1995 in San Francisco with the Cannabis Buyers Club, that was the strategy that we had in mind when we were working and writing and thinking about and hoping for and eventually passing Proposition 215. One state, and then there's two, and then there's three, and then there's five, and then there's 10, and then there's 15, and then there's 20, and then there's 26, and then it's over. We're approaching this cascade moment here, this cascade threshold. And I interrupted the article to free associate interject my thoughts there. So I'll start with the first sentence again. A few months ago, Congressman Jared Polis told the Colorado Independent that he thought it would take a majority of states legalizing medical marijuana or otherwise liberalizing their laws before Congress would be likely to do anything at the federal level. Currently, 16 states in the District of Columbia have legalized medical marijuana. Now, it looks like at least one more state is moving in that direction, with two different measures moving toward a vote in Ohio. From the Columbus Dispatch. While Cleveland billionaire Peter Lewis already had set up smoke signals about organizing and funding a medical marijuana ballot issue, another group quietly has been laying the groundwork for a constitutional amendment. I'd just like to interject here, for those that are not that familiar with the movement, don't follow this day in and day out, as I do. Peter Lewis is one of the five main funders of the various marijuana organizations, and he is the person who sponsored that poll in California on the November election, which determined that 31% of those who voted against Proposition 19 favored legalizing marijuana or reducing the penalties for marijuana. That I keep talking about. And so while Cleveland billionaire Peter Lewis has already sent up smoke signals about organizing and funding a medical marijuana ballot issue, another group quietly has been laying the groundwork for a constitutional amendment. If approved by voters, the Ohio Medical Cannabis Act of 2012 would establish a regulatory system modeled after the Ohio State Liquor Control System. There would be an Ohio Commission of Cannabis Control plus a state division and superintendent to run it. Marijuana purchases would require a doctor's prescription and would be subject to state and local sales tax. By the way, the sales tax, I read this, and it was much lower than others I've seen. It was about 2%, I believe, but still medicine should not be taxed. Peter Lewis is the chairman of the board of Progressive Insurance Company, a company founded by his father. He has donated almost $250 million to Princeton University, at least $15 million to the ACLU, and $3 million to the Marijuana Policy Project, an organization that, among other things, tracks marijuana policy in the states. Karen O'Keefe of MPP says she sees a scenario by which 27 states have legalized medical marijuana by 2014. In addition to Ohio, other states apparently on the cusp include Connecticut, Massachusetts, New York, Arkansas, Idaho, North Dakota, and New Hampshire. So we're talking about 8 more states coming up in the next election. In addition to the current 16, that comes up to 24 right there. So we're getting very close to ending this, to winning the war. The surest and quickest way of legalizing marijuana is to establish medical marijuana. Once medical marijuana is established and people see that all the bad things and all the fears are just lies, once they can see that, once it's established and they see what a medical miracle it is, a panacea for so many things, then legalization, it will be inevitable. So I interrupted the article again to preach there a moment. Let's just recap these states again. So in addition to Ohio, other states apparently on the cusp include Connecticut, Massachusetts, New York, Arkansas, Idaho, North Dakota, and New Hampshire. And I encourage all of you interested in this to take a look at what's going on in these states, to read these initiatives, to read the law and get a grasp of where these organizations funded by the MPP and so on are trying to take the movement. Notice that they're talking here in Ohio that a grassroots movement has been quietly, they say, working on an initiative in competition or opposition to the big organization sponsored initiatives, Marijuana Policy Project. So we're talking about Karen O'Keefe of MPP talking here, and once the majority of states have passed laws, she said it becomes much more likely that Congress will pass a bill like the one recently introduced by Representative Barney Frank, D. Massachusetts, and Representative Jared Polis and others that would actually legalize marijuana federally, leaving it to each state to either keep it illegal at the state level or to legalize it, regulate, and tax it. She said that even if a bill that doesn't pass, I think that's a typo. I think that's supposed to say she said that even if this bill doesn't pass, with each new state that legalizes medical marijuana, it becomes more likely that Congress will address the issue by at least instructing federal law enforcement agencies not to prosecute anyone who is in compliance with state laws that legalize and regulate medical marijuana. And there's been another press release this week about veterans and medical marijuana and the Veterans Administration, which I want to get to. And it's a good lead into this one, because when we talk about compliance with state laws, and I've got links for this on my website, on my Facebook page, on my blog, there's two states, New Mexico and California, which allow the use of medical marijuana for PTSD. Now, the Marijuana Policy Project crafted all these medical marijuana laws, except for California's, which was written by Dennis Perone, Todd McRae. Valerie Corral had a hand in it. Bill Panzer, the person who believes that Proposition 19, and has said emphatically, he said it sucked at the first normal conference, said it was anything but legalization, and explained very, very cogently why it was anything but legalization. Bill Panzer was a co-author of Proposition 215. My point is that Proposition California's initiative was the only initiative that was not written or strongly influenced by MPP. And California is the only state that, other than New Mexico, that allows the use of medical marijuana for post-traumatic stress disorder for our veterans. I've gotten an article on my website. Let me see what it's called. I think it's called, what is it called? Post-traumatic stress disorder, perhaps, and veterans for medical marijuana access, I believe it's called, where I talk at some length about marijuana and PTSD. That article is on my blog, and you can look for it, because I don't feel like looking for it while I'm talking right now, and giving you a link, but it's on my blog. And the biggest thing is it stops the dreams, the nightmares. And the fact is that being unable to sleep, sleep deprivation, is a serious problem. And if people with post-traumatic stress disorder can get a good night's sleep, that takes care of most of their other problems. It's something I learned while I was homeless here in Santa Cruz in Compassion Central. I was homeless for 3 years, and they tried to drive me out of town because I was a medical marijuana patient here in Compassion Central, Santa Cruz. But anyway, I learned that sleep deprivation is extremely debilitating. You start to hallucinate after about 3 days. And if you also have post-traumatic stress disorder, then you hallucinate, of course, your fears. I mean, and it's just a horrible not being able to sleep. And so besides the calming, neutralizing effect of cannabis, it brings down the highs and brings up the lows. It normalizes their people's moods, stabilizes their moods. In addition to that, it prevents the nightmares. Nobody knows why, but that it's the best stuff in the world for PTSD. Everyone that I've talked to that suffers from PTSD says so. And let me see if I can find that article. Don't have much time here. There's another state, New Jersey, the governor has signed. Before I get off onto the PTSD, there's actually a couple of articles I want to read in conjunction with that. Hopefully I'll have time. But in addition to events in Colorado, New Jersey, this was published 5 days ago. It's on the Associated Press. And the title is New Jersey Governor Says Medical Marijuana Law Can Go Forward. Now, this is where you can't grow your own. The patients can't grow their own. And the fact is about 3% of potential medical, basically 90%, 97% of medical marijuana patients in New Jersey get screwed. You can't get it for any psychiatric condition. They have limits on the conditions. They have given government. That's another thing that Normal did, MPP. They gave the government the right to determine who could be a medical marijuana patient. And as far as I'm concerned, that's betrayal of movement, of the movement. And that is what MPP did. actually, in regards to PTSD, it's not. There's an article about that here. I'm getting scattered all over the place. There's so much to take in. But this is in the New York Times, as a matter of fact, and it's States Differ on Marijuana for PTSD, and it's published March 24th, and it points out that it's illegal in Colorado to use marijuana for PTSD. I'll just read Okay, this is from the New York Times article. Those in March, on March the 24th, 2011, those differences were highlighted this week in the Colorado legislature when a state house committee on Monday narrowly defeated a proposal that would have directed the Department of Public Health and Environment to consider whether marijuana should be used to help people with post-traumatic stress disorder. Dr. Ned Colon, the chief medical officer for the health department, which was against the proposal, said psychiatry departments at the Veterans Affairs Hospital in Denver and the University of Colorado the University of Colorado School of Medicine in Denver agreed that marijuana should not be recommended for treating the disorder. What a crock of shit. So, anyway, California and New Mexico are the only states in which it is legal to use marijuana for post-traumatic stress and disorder. Thanks to the wonderful organization Marijuana Policy Project, among the first things of which they did after California passed Proposition 215 was to write laws which excluded psychiatric conditions from those conditions for which one may use marijuana, and set up government commissions a dozen bureaucrats, which could be easily paid off by the pharmaceutical companies, had to approve the addition of new conditions for which one could use marijuana. I'm going to skip over the New Jersey thing and just mention it in passing that the New Jersey law I don't think the governor signed it in New Jersey. He just allowed it to become law without his signature or whatever. There is a quote from the MPP, I think, Marijuana Policy Project. But I can't find it right away, which I wanted to take issue with. Oh, here it is. No, it's the Drug Policy Alliance. We are absolutely thrilled that the governor has decided to move forward with the program, and we hope that officials in other states who are contemplating options for their programs will follow New Jersey's lead, said Roseanne Scotty with the New Jersey Drug Policy Alliance. Now, why the fuck would anybody who seriously believes in legalizing marijuana want anyone to follow New Jersey's lead, where you've only got three or four conditions? Basically, 3% of medical marijuana patients can legally use it, of potential medical marijuana patients, or should we say potentially legal marijuana patients, can use it in New Jersey. They can't grow their own. They have to buy it from one of six dispensaries. Some of them will have to travel 100 miles or more to pay hugely inflated prices for medicine and pay taxes on it. Why would anybody who believes in marijuana legalization want more states to follow New Jersey? Maybe they're not really about legalization, you think? Well, I got so many articles up here now, but I want to get to the ones, hopefully I'll have time to read the ones that I mainly wanted to talk about, which are two articles regarding post-traumatic stress disorder and also regarding psychiatric drugs. Just pulling stuff up on the screen here. You're listening to Canada on Cannabis, the show that believes that marijuana, the prohibition of marijuana, is a crime against humanity. I'm Craig Canada, and I'm your host. The call-in numbers are 831-427-3772 and 831-469-3119. If you'd like to call in and chat. Okay, here's the article. It's about veterans and PTSD. And this was 24th. The New York Times again, and this is in the money and policy section of the New York Times. And the title is VA Easing Rules for Users of Medical Marijuana. And it was published on July the 23rd. Oh, wait, that's 2010. Lord have mercy. In any case, I was looking for articles about this, but evidently that a policy has not been official. This is another article here on July the 20th, 2011, in the Stars and Stripes. And let's just pull up this other. I've got several articles on this. This came to my attention because of this article. Well, there's been several articles on it, but as I said, this one's in Stars and Stripes, 20th of July, 2011, marijuana treatment sought for chronic PTSD sufferers. Researchers are seeking federal approval for what is believed to be the first study to examine the therapeutic effects of marijuana on veterans with chronic post-traumatic stress disorder, according to a report in the New York Times. And this is in the Stars and Stripes. The proposal from the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies in Santa Cruz, California, and a researcher at the University of Arizona College of Medicine would look at the potential benefits of cannabis by examining 50 combat veterans who have not responded to other treatment, the paper reported on Monday. These are people whom we put in harm's way, and we have a moral obligation to help them. Rick Doblin, founder and executive director of the Psychedelic Studies Group, was quoted as saying. By the way, I believe John Gilmore, who's another one of the big money people behind the marijuana organizations, and someone that I knew, I knew John Gilmore back in 1973, believe it or not. But anyway, he is one of the founders of the this organization, the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies, as well as the Electric Frontiers Foundation. He's a very interesting and very accomplished person. In April, the Food and Drug Administration said it was satisfied that safety concerns over the study had been addressed by Doblin and Dr. Sue Sisley, an assistant professor of psychiatry and internal medicine in Arizona, according to a letter from the FDA provided on to the Times by Doblin, but noted there are other hurdles, such as where the marijuana would come from. One Army veteran from Texas who fought in Iraq for 18 months beginning in 2006 told the Times that he used marijuana 3 times a day in lieu of the prescribed painkillers and antidepressants. He asked that his name not be used because Texas does not allow medical marijuana. "I have seen it with my own eyes," he told the paper. "It works for a lot of guys coming home." If the study is approved, veterans would be given up to 1.8 grams or about 3 marijuana cigarettes a day to treat anxiety, depression, nightmares, and other symptoms brought on by PTSD, the Times wrote. Now, publicly traded corporations, I shouldn't say two. I know that CBIS in Colorado Springs, I believe, with Dr. Bob Melamed and another marijuana activist. He was director of Normal for a while, and I can't remember his name at the moment. Dr. Bob Melamed and CBIS is the symbol. Cannabis Science is the name of the company, and they put in an application. They've also added a military, somebody from some honcho from the military, and so they're hoping to participate in this study and have applied to do this study, and this may very well be their study that the New York Times is talking about. Something you might want to look into. And I just wanted to mention that in conjunction with this article, which I'm about to read you now, is from Common Dreams. It's published in Common Dreams. It was originally published in Al Jazeera. It says, published on Saturday, July the 16th, 2011, by Al Jazeera. And it's titled "Mass Psychosis in the U.S.: How Big Pharma Hooked Americans on Drugs." Has America become a nation of psychotics? You would certainly think so, based on the explosion in the use of antipsychotic medications. In 2008, with over $14 billion in sales, antipsychotics became the single top-selling therapeutic class of prescription drugs in the United States, surpassing drugs used to treat high cholesterol and acid reflux. Once upon a time, antipsychotics were reserved for a relatively small number of patients with hardcore psychiatric diagnosis, primarily schizophrenia and bipolar disorder, to treat such symptoms as delusions, hallucinations, or formal thought disorder. Today, it seems, everyone is taking antipsychotics. Parents are told that their unruly kids are in fact bipolar and in need of antipsychotics, while old people with dementia are dosed in large numbers with drugs once reserved largely for schizophrenics. Americans with symptoms ranging from chronic depression to anxiety to insomnia are now being prescribed antipsychotics at rates that seem to indicate a national mass psychosis. It is anything but a coincidence that the explosion in antipsychotic use coincides with the pharmaceutical industry's development of a new class of medications known as, quote, atypical antipsychotics, quote, beginning with Zyprexa, Risperdal, and Seroquel in the 1990s, followed by Abilify in the early 2000s. These drugs were touted as being more effective than older antipsychotics like Haldol and Thorazine. More importantly, they lack the most noxious side effects of the older drugs, in particular, the tremors and other motor control problems. Now, I just have to interject here. The technical name for this is tardive dyskinesia, the tremors and other motor control problems. Look up tardive dyskinesia. One more time, folks. Tardive dyskinesia. It is a condition or a disease that is caused only by pharmaceuticals. You got that? It's caused only by pharmaceuticals, and it's caused by these antipsychotics, and it's also caused by antidepressants, such as Paxil and Prozac and Zoloft. These will also cause tardive dyskinesia. It is not reversible. Now, people have told me that they did have it, and that after they had been off the drugs, I'm talking about the pills for several years, it went away, it diminished, even though they still have episodes of it every now and then. Tardive dyskinesia. You know, if marijuana caused anything remotely like tardive dyskinesia, just imagine what people would be saying about it. Of course, it doesn't. I mean, it's the fact is marijuana stops tremors. In a few minutes, now you can see it stop. You can see it stop tremors and spasms before your eyes. But let's go back to the articles. The typical antipsychotics were the bright new stars in the pharmaceutical industry's roster of psychotropic drugs, costly, patented medications that made people feel and behave better without any shaking or drooling. Lord. Made people feel better without any shaking or drooling. Made people feel better without any shaking or drooling. Now, you know, I don't know about you, but if I was taking a drug that caused me to drool and shake, I would be very depressed over that, and I would not be feeling better. I would be hugely embarrassed. The only way that you can feel better about drooling and shaking is if you are so whacked out of your gourd that you don't give a shit about anything. Excuse my French. The atypical antipsychotics were the bright new stars in the pharmaceutical industry's roster of psychotropic drugs, costly patented medications that made people feel and behave better without any shaking or drooling. Sales grew steadily until by 2009, Seroquel and Abilify numbered 5th and 6th in annual drug sales, and prescriptions written for the top three atypical antipsychotics totaled more than 20 million. There's about 300-something million people in the United States, so 20 million prescriptions out of that is, we're talking about probably 10% of the adult population there. Suddenly, antipsychotics weren't just for psychotics anymore. You're all being drugged, folks. By now, just about everyone knows how the drug industry works to influence the minds of American doctors, plying them with gifts, junkets, ego-tripping awards, and research funding in exchange for endorsing or prescribing the latest and most lucrative drugs. Quote, psychiatrists are particularly targeted by Big Pharma because psychiatric diagnoses are very subjective, quote, says Dr. Adrienne Few Berman, whose Farmed Out project tracks the industry's influence on American medicine and who last month hosted a conference on the subject at Georgetown. A shrink can't give you a blood test or an MRI to figure out precisely what's wrong with you, so it's often a case of diagnosis by prescription. If you feel better after you take an antidepressant, it's assumed that you were depressed. As the researchers in one study of the drug industry's influence put it, quote, the lack of biological tests for mental disorders renders psychiatry especially vulnerable to industry influence, quote. For this reason, they argue, it's particularly important that the guidelines for diagnosing and treating mental illness be compiled, quote, on the basis of an objective review of the scientific evidence, end quote, and not on whether the doctors writing them got a big grant from Merck or own stock in AstraZeneca. Marcia Angel, former director of the New England Journal of Medicine and a leading critic of the Big Pharma, puts it more bluntly. Notice that a leading critic of the Big Pharma is a former editor of the New England Journal of Medicine. Surprise, surprise, surprise. Marcia Angel, former editor of the New England Journal of Medicine and a leading critic of Big Pharma, puts it more bluntly. Quote, psychiatrists are in the pocket of the industry, end quote. Angel has pointed out that most of the Diagnostic and Statistic Manual of Mental Disorders, the DSM, the Bible of mental health clinicians, have ties to the drug industry. Likewise, a 2009 study showed that 18 out of 20 of the shrinks who wrote the American Psychiatric Association's most recent clinical guidelines for treating depression, bipolar disorders, and schizophrenia had financial ties to the drug companies. In a recent article in the New York Review of Books, Angel deconstructs what she calls an apparent, quote, raging epidemic of mental illness, quote, among Americans. The use of psychoactive drugs, including both antidepressants and antipsychotics, has exploded. And if the new drugs are so effective, Angel points out, we should, quote, expect the prevalence of mental illness to be declining, not rising. Instead, quote, the tally of those who are so disabled by mental disorders that they qualify for supplemental security income, SSI, or Social Security Disability Insurance, SSSDI, increased nearly 2.5 times between 1987 and 2007, from 1 in 184 Americans to 1 in 76. For children, the rise is even more startling, a 35-fold increase in the same 2 decades. Mental illness is now the leading cause of disability in children. Under the tutelage of Big Pharma, we are, quote, simply expanding the criteria for mental illness so that nearly everyone has one, end quote. Few Berman agrees. In the age of aggressive drug marketing, she says, quote, psychiatric diagnoses have expanded to include many perfectly normal people, end quote. Cost-benefit analysis. What's especially troubling about the overprescription of the new antipsychotics is its prevalence among the very young and the very old, vulnerable groups who often do not make their own choices when it comes to what medications they take. Investigations into antipsychotic use suggest that their purpose in these cases may be to subdue and tranquilize rather than to treat any genuine problems or psychosis. Carl Elliott reports in Mother Jones magazine, quote, once bipolar disorder could be treated with atypicals, rates of diagnoses rose dramatically. especially in children. According to a recent Columbia University study, the number of children and adolescents treated for bipolar disorder rose 40-fold between 1994 and 2003, end quote. Just read this one more time for you folks. According to a recent Columbia University study, the number of children and adolescents treated for bipolar disorder rose 40-fold between 1994 and 2003. And according to another study, quote, one in five children who visited a psychiatrist came away with a prescription for an antipsychotic drug, end quote. A remarkable series published in the Palm Beach Post in May revealed that the state of Florida's Juvenile Justice Department has literally been pouring these drugs into juvenile facilities, quote, routinely, end quote, doling them out, quote, for reasons that never were approved by federal regulators, end quote. The numbers are staggering. Quote, in 2007, for example, the Department of Juvenile Justice bought more than twice as much Seroquel as ibuprofen. Overall, in 24 months, the department bought 326,081 tablets of Seroquel, Abilify, Risperdal, and other antipsychotic drugs for use in state-operated jails and homes for children. That's enough to hand out 446 pills a day, 7 days a week, for 2 years in a row, to kids in jails and programs that can hold no more than 2,300 boys and girls on a given day. End quote. Further, the paper discovered that, quote, one in three of the psychiatrists who have contracted with the State Department of Juvenile Justice in the past 5 years has taken speaker fees or gifts from companies that make antipsychotic medications, end quote. Just let me pause here to take a sip before I finish this article. This was originally posted in Al Jazeera. The copy that I'm reading is in Common Dreams, and it's titled Mass Psychosis in the U.S., How Big Pharma Hooked Americans on Drugs. In addition to expanding the diagnosis of serious mental illness, drug companies have encouraged doctors to prescribe atypical antipsychotics for a host of off-label uses. In one particularly notorious episode, the drug maker Eli Lilly pushed Zyprexa on the caregivers of old people with Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia, as well as agitation, anxiety, and insomnia. In selling to nursing home doctors, sales reps reportedly used the slogan, 5 at 5, meaning that 5 milligrams of Zyprexa at 5 p.m. would sedate their more difficult charges. The practice persisted even after FDA had warned Lilly that the drug was not approved for such uses and that it could lead to obesity and even diabetes in elderly patients. And by the way, folks, I just have to interject here that Alzheimer's is one of the, I don't know if you'd call it a psychiatric condition or not, but it's one of the conditions for which marijuana has proved effective. It calms the rages, and there are reports that people have improved mental functioning and cognition. And memory using marijuana, that it brings their memory back, it brings back their mental functions. You need to look this up regarding Alzheimer's, folks. You need to look this up. Marijuana not only helps Alzheimer's once you have it, but there's also studies that indicate that it prevents holds off the onset, makes the onset, it takes longer to develop it. And look up Alzheimer's and marijuana. Back to the article. In a video interview conducted in 2006, Sharham Ahari, who sold Zyprexa for 2 years at the beginning of the decade described to me how the salespeople would wangle the doctors into prescribing it. At the time, he recalled, his doctor clients were giving him a lot of grief over patients who were, quote, flipping out over the weight gain associated with the drug along with the diabetes. We were instructed to downplay side effects and focus on the efficacy of the drug, to recommend the patient drink a glass of water before taking a pill, before the meal, and then after the meal, in hopes the stomach would expand, end quote, and provide an easy way out of this obstacle to increase sales. When docs complained, he recalled, quote, I told them our drug is state of the art. What's more important? You want them to get better, or do you want them to stay the same? A thin psychotic patient or a fat, stable patient, end quote. For the drug company, Sharman says, the decision to continue pushing the drug despite side effects is a matter of cost-benefit analysis. Whether you will make more money by continuing to market the drug for off-label use and perhaps defending against lawsuits than you would otherwise. In the case of Zyprexa in January 2009, Lilly settled a lawsuit brought by the U.S. Justice Department agreeing to pay $1.4 billion. Including, quote, a criminal fine of $515 million, the largest ever in a health case, and the largest criminal fine for an individual corporation ever imposed in a United States criminal prosecution of any kind. The Department of Justice said in announcing the settlement, but Lilly's sale of Zyprexa in that year alone were over $1.8 billion. It's interesting, the $1.4 billion here, that's the same amount of money that Tom Amiano, the California auditor, I guess, determined would be realized from taxing recreational, not medical, but recreational, not medical, but recreational marijuana, $1.4 billion. That's how much California would realize from legalizing and taxing recreational marijuana. And this is the same fine that was assessed against Eli Lilly for on Zyprexa by the U.S. It's just a coincidence I found interesting. Going on with this article, making patients worse. As it turns out, the atypical antipsychotics may not even be the best choice for people with genuine, undisputed psychosis. A growing number of health professionals have come to think these drugs are not really as effective as older, less expensive medicines which they have replaced, that they themselves produce side effects that cause other sorts of disease, such as diabetes, and plunge the patient deeper into the gloomy world of serious mental disorder. Along with stories of success come reports of people turned into virtual zombies. Elliot reports in Mother Jones, quote, after another large analysis in the Lancet found that most atypicals actually performed worse than older drugs, two senior British psychiatrists penned a damning editorial that ran in the same issue. Dr. Peter Tyrer, the editor of the British Journal of Psychiatrists, and Dr. Tim Kendall of the Royal College of Psychiatrists wrote, quote, the spurious invention of the atypicals can now be regarded as its invention only, cleverly manipulated by the drug industry for marketing purposes and only now being exposed. Bottom line, stop Big Pharma and the parasitic shrink community from wantonly pushing these pills across the population. And, you know, this article sort of skirts the issue, but I just want to go back to this section here. Sort of skirts the issue, but it doesn't really explore the possibility that these drugs actually cause the disease for which they're given. And quite frankly, I personally, myself, I have a diagnosis of bipolar and am considered 100% disabled because of it. I received this diagnosis after taking Prozac for situational depression. I had a horrible reaction to Prozac, and I tried other antidepressants, and they seriously, oh, God, what I went through on those things. It was pure hell. mental torture. And still suffer to this day. The drugs permanently injured me. And just want to go back to this, read this part again, but it seems this article sort of hints at, but it almost leads you to conclude that these increase in diagnoses are false, that these permanent disabilities where people are receiving SSI or Social Security disability are false diagnoses, but they aren't. And it does seem to me that these drugs that they're giving people for depression and for psychosis are actually making people work and worse and resulting in permanent disabilities and making them more disabled and less functional than they were without the drugs. Let me just find these figures. I want to read it to you again. Here we go. We should expect the prevalence of mental illness. If the new drugs are so effective, we should expect the prevalence of mental illness to be declining, not rising. Instead, quote, the tally of those who are so disabled by mental disorders that they qualify for supplemental security income or Social Security disability insurance increased nearly 2.5 times between 1987 and 2007, from 1 in 184 Americans to 1 in 76. For children, the rise is even more startling, a 35-fold increase in the same 2 decades because of these drugs. These drugs are causing the diseases for which they prescribe them. These are the same people that are opposed to medical marijuana, by the way, and have been throwing people in jail and stealing everything they have to prevent the use of marijuana for any reason whatsoever. It looks like we've got about 10 minutes to the hour now. And I've kind of touched on the New Jersey situation and talked about why it disturbs me, you know, the fact that MPP is lauding its success and wants other states to do it. I think these people are leading us into an ambush, quite frankly. Anyway, I guess I'm going to start closing the show up now. You've been listening to Canada on Cannabis, and my name is Craig Canada. I'm your host, have been your host for the last 2 hours. I'm on every Sunday evening from 6 to 8 p.m. on Free Radio Santa Cruz. That's 101.1 FM in the Santa Cruz area, and streaming online on the internet at www.freakradio.org. That's F-R-E-A-K radio, R-A-D-I-O.org. My site where I have my shows archived is www.palmspringsbum.org. That's one word, P-A-L-M-S-P-R-I-N-G-S-B-U-M. www.palmspringsbum.org/blog. And if you want to go directly to my show page, you can type in www.palmspringsbum.org/blog/Canada-on-cannabis. And with that, I think I'm going to start closing up the show tonight. Give you a little exit music here. My favorite song here, Walking on the Sun by Smash Mouth.
Teach the world to snuff the fires and the liars. They are no your fist soaked with the tears because a baby's life has been revoked. The bond is broke, got so choke up and full. Kiss on the close up, missed all wheels, I can't reform. No God like Hocus Pocus, so don't sit back, kick back and watch the world get worse. Rap news that's in your neighborhood is under attack. Put away the crack before the crack put you away, you need to.